Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Eruvin Daf Nun Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a Mark Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 11 lines from the top of Daf Nun Hey. We open today's shiur with a Tanaic source. As you can see, it appears in a frame. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading, in which we've written, Ketzad me'abrin es ha'orim. This expression really was seen already in the Mishnah with which this perek opened. The Mishnah was found at the bottom of Nun Beis, Omid Beis, where the Mishnah mentioned Ketzad me'abrin es ha'orim, Bias Nichnas, Bias Yotze, Pogum Nichnas, Pogum Yotze. We're involved in the measuring of a tchum of the 2,000 amos around a city. In the event that the city does not have smooth sides, so the Mishnah mentioned how we establish sides of a city, and we had diagrams in the Pirush Chai that you can refer to even now. Diagram number 5, for example, as well as earlier diagrams, numbers 1 and 2, indicating the situation of something protruding from a city. And the word ma'abrin was similar to the word ibur, which refers to a pregnancy where the woman who is pregnant, her belly protrudes forth from the rest of her body. So too in the event that the city has elements that protrude forth from its basic boundaries, we don't start measuring the tum, rather from those points that are protruding outwards. Let us pick up the Gemara here on Daf Nun Hey, 11 lines from the top. Tonu Rabbonan, Ketzed Ma'abrin Es He'orim. So point number one, Aruka Kamos Shehi. We should point out, as we've written in a note between the lines, that the details of this Tanaic source will be explained later in the Gemara. So the first point is a city, Aruka, if it is long. So Kamoshi, as it is. In other words, if the city has smooth sides to it, so you measure from the edge of the city 2,000 amos in all directions. Agula, if the city is circular. Osin lo zovios. You can refer to illustration 11 to appreciate what we just said. That is that if the city is circular in shape, so you make a square around the city, and only then would you start measuring the tchum. In other words, the city boundaries benefit by having the corners that you can see. Let us take a look at the Rashi. Agula hoisen lozavios kishibo limdoid tchumin liksoiseha. When you come to measure the tchum from its edge, lo yimdod lo mehachoma, you don't measure it from its wall, meaning the wall in this case is a round wall around the circular city, elo yosef lo ribua, rather you add a square element, kilomar yarchik minachoma kadei ribua, you would distance yourself from the existing round wall in a square formation, deho marbinon peos lechol mili de Shabbos. When it comes to Shabbos measurements, we give you the benefit of corners, even though those corners are not actually part of the city. Ve'achakach yimdot chumei hakronos. And then you start measuring the tchum from the corners. In other words, including the corners. She'im bo lotzeis derech keren ho'ir. If you were, let's say, to start a journey from the corner of the city, yistakir ba'lichosu revia, you will in fact gain an extra a quarter more, 25% more distance. Dimruba yoiser alo igu revia, a square in which a circle is inscribed, the square is a quarter greater than the internal circle. So you don't start your measure immediately at the edge of the circular city, but rather you start from the, you can start your measure, you will start your 2,000 amma measure from the corners. There is much more detail than what we are saying right now that will be discussed in the Gemara. Continuing in our Tanaic source in the Gemara text, point number 3, Merubas Ein Oisin Lazavius. If the city is already a square-shaped city, so we don't add corners. Some of these points may appear obvious, but as we said, the Gemara will explain them. Hoiso Ruchova Mitzad Echon Uktsoro Mitzad Acher. Let's take a look at diagram 14 to appreciate this. You can see on page 102, diagram 14, the city is shaped in such a way that at one end of the city it's narrow, the other end of the city it's wide. Roin oiso kilu hi shava. So we look at it as if it is a square. And you can see that is in the diagram 14, the dashed lines establish that geometric form, this shape, this non-square, and you make it into a square. And only then will you start measuring your 2,000 amos. Point number 5, Hoya bayis echod yoytze kemin pogum o shnei botem yoytzen kemin shnei pigumin. You can see this in illustration 15, where you have a house jutting out from one of the sides of the city. So roin oison kiluchut motuach aleihen, you would view them as if a string is drawn from them. Umodeid mimenu ulahalon alpayim amah. Only from that point where the string is drawn from the edge of the jutting house, then you measure your 2,000 amos. And that's all in the illustration. You can see this in illustration 15. Point number 6, Hoysa asuya kemin keshes o kemin gam. If you have a city whose shape is like you see in illustration 16, a bow in the context of bow and arrow, a bow-shaped city, semicircle-shaped city, as you can see, that's now, so when we say semicircle, it would mean maybe a crescent-shaped, whereby there's an internal section is without houses. It's a vacant area, and that as you could, as we said, you could see this in illustration at the bottom, at the illustration bottom of page 102. That's the kemin keshes o kemin gam. That's illustrated at the top of page 103. A right angle shaped city. You would then make it into a square, as the source says. Royin oisa kilu hi maleo botim v'chatzeros. The area that's not filled in with houses, you would view as if it's filled in. Umodeid mimenu ulahalon alpayim amo. And only after you view it as if it's filled in, do you start your measure of the 2,000 amos. And as we said before, the Gemara now goes on to explain the source. Omar Mar, so a quote from the source, Aruka Kamos Shihi, if the city is long, so it is left as it is, no additional considerations, and you simply measure from the edge of the existing city. Pshita, the Gemara says, well, that's obvious. Lo Tzricha, what is necessary to be taught, what's implied in this source, or what is the intent of this source, is Dariko Uketina. Illustration number 10 will show you what we're talking about. It's rectangular in shape. It's long and narrow. Mahu detema litein lo pusya ki orka. If we didn't have this source, I would have thought that you would imagine a pusya, a width to the city corresponding to its length. In other words, you would convert the rectangle into a square, meaning using the existing length of the city, you would then make sides to the city also of a similar measure, and only then start measuring the tchum. Kamash Malan, the source therefore tells us that we don't do that. By the source telling us Aruka Kamoshi means you leave the rectangular city as it is, and you start measuring the tchum from its current edges, and you don't measure from an imagined square. Mirubas ein oisin la zovios. If the city is square, the source had taught us in point number 3, if it's square, so you don't add corners to it. She thought, well, that's obvious. Lo yitzricha, the source is necessary. Demiraba v'lomraba beribua oilam. So here we take advantage of illustration number 12. So we have a city that is, it's basically a square, and its sides, though, do not correspond to the directions of the world. In other words, the northern side of the city, and you, as you can see, as is illustrated, comes to a point. In other words, you don't have a northern side, but rather a northern point, so that the city's directions don't correspond to the directions of the world. So, mahu detema, without this source, I would have thought that what one would do in terms of measuring the tchum is lirba'a beribua oilam. You would imagine the city as looking like, is as the illustration at the top of page 102, the left-hand illustration, meaning you would imagine sides to the city, leave the city as it is, and then add sides to it that correspond to the directions of the world. And only then would you start measuring the tchum. Komash Molon, so the source comes to tell us, this Tanaic source tells us that you do not do that, but rather leave the city as it is, and you measure the tchum from its existing sides. Again, a quote from the source. This was in the source. We had this as illustration as a point number 5 in the source. Hoya bayis echod yoytze kamin pogum o shnei botim yoytzen kamin shnei pigumim. And we made reference to illustration number 15. There's another illustration that's necessary for appreciating this, and that's back on at the beginning, page 99, illustration number 1 or illustration number 2. So in this, if the Gemara asks here, hashto bayis echod amris, in the case of one house protruding, as is illustrated in illustration 15, you say there royin. Royin means you envision the border of the city as extending from the edge of one protruding house. Shnei botim mibayo. If you have two houses protruding from the same side, and that is illustrated in illustration number 1, you can see there are what would appear to be two houses protruding, even though that's not an exact illustration of what we're talking about. Maybe you could see this a little more clearly in illustration number 2, where the pogums, those castle shapes, are protruding from the city. So we're asking here, if you have only one house protruding, we give you the leniency of extending the edge of the city from that house. So if you have two houses protruding from the same side of the city, do I need to tell you that? That would be even more obvious. So the more answers, lo tzricha. The case in this source that spoke about shnei botim is mishtei ruchos. There are houses protruding from the edges of the city, but from two different sides of the city, as you can see in illustration 19. So without this Tanaic source, I would have thought mahu detemo me ruach achas amrinon mishtei ruchos lo amrinon, that this leniency of extending the border of the city, we say only from one side, but to extend this leniency from two separate sides of the city, we wouldn't allow for that. Komash Malon, therefore, we have this source to tell us that even from two separate sides, two opposite sides of the city, we nevertheless will measure the tchum from the edge of those protruding houses. Continuing, again, a quote from the source. Hoiso kemin keshes, this was point number 6 in the original source. Hoiso asu kemin keshes oy kemin gam. if you have a city that was crescent-shaped or right-angle-shaped, as we saw in illustrations 16 at the bottom of page 102 and illustration number 18 at the top of 103. So, royen oisok iluhi maleo botem v'chatzeros, we would view the empty areas as if they were filled with houses and courtyards, umoideid mimeno ulahalon alpayim amo. And from the edge, you would then measure from the, what we can say, from the filled-in area, you would then measure your tchum of 2,000 amos. Omar Rav Huna. We're going to be focusing now on this issue of a city that's Ir Ha'asuya Kekeshes, as we indicated in our topic heading on the side. And we have a statement of Rav Huna, and we've underlined him and called this Aleph because in a couple lines we're going to underline Rav Huna again and call, there's a second statement that will pose a problem to what we're going to read right now. So, Omar Rav Huna, Ir Ha'asuya Kekeshes, a city that appears as a bow, im yesh bein shnei roshah pochos merbos alofim amo moididin lo min hayeser. Let's take a look at illustration number 20. There's a new word that we just saw here, yeser. Yeser, you can see in the bow shape, it's the yeser is the string of the bow. In illustration 17 at the bottom of page 102, you can see a bow and arrow, and the Aleph, that is a position in that diagram, is a reference to the Yeser. The bow itself is called the Keshes. So, in illustration 20, you see what the point Rav Huna is making right now, and that is this idea of measuring, and of course this is a leniency to allow us to measure from the imagined bow of the city. This is true, says Rav Huna, only if the distance between the two existing ends of the city, of the bow, the tips of the bow, if you will, are less than 4,000 amos from one another. So, reading that again, Rav Huna says that im yesh bein shnei roshel pochos me'arbu asalofim amo moidudin lo min hayeser. As you can see in illustration 20, if the edges or the tips of the city are within 4,000 amos, then we allow you the leniency of measuring, of starting your 2,000 amo measure from that point, from the bow, from the string point, the im lav. If, however, the tips are not within 4,000 amos, as you can see in illustration 21, then we say moididin lo min hakeshes. Then we will allow, provide for measuring only from the bow itself, which is, you can see, which would result in a stringency. That is that they have to start their measure from the houses themselves and not from the imagined string, limiting, of course, their tchum. The Gemara asks, umi omar Rav Huna hachi. Would Rav Huna have really said thusly? The Ha'oma Rav Huna, illustration 22. Choymas Hu'ir Shinifritza. You can see in illustration 22 there was a city that had a wall around it, and there was a breach that developed in the wall. B'meo ve'arboim v'achas u'shlish. This city is viewed as a singular entity only if the gap that is formed by the breach is within 141 and a third amos. A breach greater than that, and it's added, you can see in the illustration, there's a vacant area that we're talking about. The area that is now broken open is an area that's not, there are no houses there. So in order to connect the city, in the absence of the wall that would have formed to unify the city as a singular unit, but in the absence of the wall, the distance between the two parts must be within 141 and a third amos. Now, that distance is much, much less than the 4,000 amos that Rav Huna spoke about in his previous halacha. So the question is, how can Rav Huna allow for the city to be viewed as a singular entity with a gap of 4,000 amos, when in the second halacha of Rav Huna, the city is not viewed as a singular entity if there is a gap of more than 141 and a third amos? Amar Rabba bar Ula, lo kashya. There is no question here. Kan beruach achas, kan mishte ruchos. In the case of Ir HaSuya Kekeshes, we can allow this leniency of 4,000 up to 4,000 amos, because the breach, so to speak, is only at one end of the city, meaning the gap between the two tips of the bow is a gap, but if you follow along the bow itself at the other end, there is a continuum of houses, a continued settlement. However, in the second din of Rav Huna, where the shiur, the distance was only 141 and a third amos, there is a breach on two sides. In other words, there is no continuum whatsoever. As a result of that, we are more stringent. The Gemara asks a question. This question lasts a number of lines, hence we have a long question marking. It takes you down a number of lines down the top of Amud Beis. Umay Komash Molon. What is Rav Huna trying to tell us in this number, in this second halacha of his? We call the Beis halacha. De Noisnin Karpuf Lazu Vekarpuf Lazu. Is it that we allow a karpuf? A karpuf is a distance of 70 and 2/3 amos. That we grant a karpuf area for each part of the city. Karpuf lazu, v'karpuf lazu. In other words, the karpuf area, the 70 and 2/3 amal area, we assign to a city. And only then would you start measuring the tchum. And if you have two cities that are close to one another, we will give each city a karpuf area. Let us look in the Rashi toward the bottom of the page. Umay komash mlon. I bishnei ruchos. If we're talking about a breach on two sides of the city, devadai kishtei ayoros hein, they are now viewed as if they're two separate cities. Amay ashmi'inan Rav Huna denoisten karpuf lezu v'karpuf lezu. What do we need Rav Huna here in halacha Beis to tell us this point? Why do we need this? The shtei ayoros hasmuchos zulazu noisim karpif shel shivim amu v'shrayim l'chol achas yos kir achas kidei l'chabrom al yedei karpifos halalu la'asoysun kir achas. If he's coming to tell us this point, that two cities that are near one another, that we allow each one to have extension of 70 and 2/3 amos in order to connect them, if they are in fact within the 141 and a third amos as a result of giving two karpifos for each one, v'afal b'she'en binyan bein ha-karpifos, v'gam, even though there's no construction between these two karpif areas, v'gam ha-karpifos atzmon einon mukafos mechitza, elo shiur karpif ko'omar, and there's no enclosure, there's no wall around them there. Rashi makes reference to shiur karpuf, means a distance of a karpuf, because technically speaking, a karpuf is an enclosed area. So here we're not talking about a formally enclosed area, but rather a distance of 70 and 2/3 amas per city. Is that what Rav Huna is trying to tell us here in halacha, in his halacha Beis? The Gemara continues at the bottom, telling us what the problem is. Ha'omra Rav Huna chado zimna. This very point Rav Huna has already taught us on a previous occasion. This not. We have a quote from the Mishnah that says, this is a Mishnah that's quoted later on Daf Nun Zayin, Noisnin Karpif Le'ir, Divrei Rebbe Meir. Rabbi Meir says that we give a city a belt around it of 70 and 2/3 amos before you measure its tchum. V'chachomim omrim lo'omru karpif ela bein shtei ayoros. The concept of karpif is stated only between two cities in order to join them together to form them as one entity and start measuring the tchum from their extremities. V'itmar Rav Huna omar karpif lezu v'karpif lezu. And Rav Huna mentions that when we speak about the two cities, each city is granted a space of 70 and 2/3 amos. The Chiyo Barav, he disagrees and says, Omar ein noisten elo karpuf echod lishneim. If you're dealing with two cities, the two cities will be viewed as connected only if they are within 70 and 2/3 amos of each other. One karpuf for both cities. The main problem is, and we've dashed under Rav Huna's name to draw your attention to the fact that Rav Huna already teaches this point regarding the Mishnah, and specifically the Chachomim that we just cited in the Mishnah from Daf Nun Zayin, namely Karpuf Lezu for Karpuf Lezu. So, seemingly making the Rav Huna din at the bottom of Omid Aleph, Rav Huna Beis, seemingly redundant or unnecessary. The Gemara answers, I need both halachas of Rav Huna. This is a type of answer, we call this a tsrichusa, and it lasts a number of lines, hence we have a long answer marking. The tsricha, we need both teachings. Di ashmin and hacha, had we taught the halacha here of the chomos ha'ir shenifritza, the illustration 22, where there was a singular city whose wall broke at two sides. There, mishum dahavi le tzad heter mei kora. Maybe only then will Rav Huna grant this leniency of two karpuf distances, because it originally was one unified city. Aval hosam, but in the case of two separate cities, emolo, maybe Rav Huna wouldn't have granted this leniency of two karpifs. V'yashmin and Hosam, had we had that halacha of two separate cities, and we grant each one a karpif distance, mishum d'dechiko tashmishtayu. Granting them only one karpif would have led to d'dechiko tashmishtayu, means too limited area of use. In other words, a city needs a certain area around it to unload deliveries made to the city, a certain belt of open area for the city's use. So if we would have had the halacha of two cities, two separate cities with each one with its own municipal needs and concerns, there I would have said we have a leniency of granting a separate karpif per city in which we would then join them together. Aval hocha, when you're dealing with one city, below dechiko tashmishtayu, where the singular karpif distance would not result in too limited an area, it's not dochik, it's not too closed or squalid a location, emo lo, maybe in the case of one city whose wall was breached on two sides, we wouldn't grant two karpifs. Therefore, tzricha, I need, therefore, the halacha of Rav Huna that we saw in the bottom of Amar Aleph as well. The Gemara asks, going back to the city of the city in the shape of a bow, a crescent-shaped city, v'kamo have bein yeser lekeshes. Assuming that we have the tips of the city, of the crescent, the tips of the bow, are within 4,000 amos of one another, the question here is, what is the allowed distance between the yeser and the keshes? The yeser, again, is the string that you draw, the string of the bow, and the keshes would be the bottom of the bow itself. So the question is, as you can see illustrated in 25, Illustration 25. What is the allowed distance between the base of the bow and the imagined string? Once again, assuming that the tips of the city are within 4,000 amos. Two opinions. Rabo Barav Huna Omar Alpayim Amo. You can see this illustrated in 25. The 2,000 amos that's written in. If you have that and no more than that, then we allow you to measure the tum from the yeser. Rava Bray the Rabo Barav Huna Omar. He is appreciated more by looking at illustration 26. He says, "Afilu yeser me alpayim amo." Even if the distance is more than 2,000 amos, we allow you to measure from the yeser. Omar Abaye, kavose de rova bre de rabo baravuna mistabra. Abaye sides with the number two opinion, the more lenient opinion. The boy hoder osi derech botin, because there is access, even if the gap is more than 2,000 amos between the base of the bow and the string in the city, of course, you still have access to the area of the yeser by going via the bow itself without any need for an eruv tumin, so that since the entire area that's accounted for by the yeser is accessible by going via the bow itself, as you can see illustrated in 26. Therefore, the distance between the base of the bow and the yeser is of no relevance, and therefore you're entitled to measure the city boundaries from the yeser. Even, once again, we're just repeating ourselves, even if the gap or the distance between the base of the bow and the yeser itself is more than 2,000 amos. We continue with a quote from the Mishnah, Hoyu Shom Gedudios Kvos Asorot Tvochim. To appreciate this, you can refer back to illustration 3 from page 100. Those are, you can see these ruins that exist beyond the city wall. Those are the Gedudios, and if they have a height of 10 Tvochim, so then we can start our Tchum measure from their edge, and which provided, of course, the Gedudios are within 70 and 2/3 amos of the city. The Gemara, my Gedudios, what is meant by that? Omar Rav Yehuda, Shalosh Mechitzos Shein Aleihem Tikra. So three walls that remain with no roof on top of them. On the side of the Gemara, under our No Say heading, we have point one, Gedudios, Mivnim Shvurim. These are broken structures. Im Misabrin Im Hoyer. Are they included as part of the city? And the Gemara will be elaborating on the issue of Gedudios. Number two, Rishima Shel Dvarim. We're going to then we'll also see a list of things. Aleph, Shemis Abrin Inoir, and Beis Shiloh Mis Abrin Inoir, things that are included in the Ibur Hoir, namely that would constitute an extension of the city, and only from that point onwards would we measure the Tum. And there are other things that are of so little significance they would not be considered extensions of the city. So we'll see this in a Tanaic source, and you can see the use of the double underline under our Mivneh heading, Elu Shemis Abrin and She'ein Mis Abrin Imo. In effect, the second half of the source will be a reflection, or we could say a reflection of the first half of the source, meaning all the properties that existed in the first part, in the first list, will be absent in the second half of the source. The Gemara, Ibai Alaho, our Gemara now asks a question, Shtei Mechitzis V'yeshlem Tikrama, what about a structure that is made of two walls and with a roof upon them? How do we view that in light of the information we just learned that three Mechitzis without a Tikra, without a roof, does extend the city of Ken. We're just repeating ourselves, provided they're within 70 and two-thirds amos of the existing city. What about two walls with a roof? Toshma. So we bring a Tanaic source. We also have a long marking. The Toshma with a vertical dashed line shows us how long the Gemara will be preoccupied with trying to answer this question. What the Gemara does is brings a long source from which we extract one point, and you can see it toward the end of, at the end of the frame section, the Gemara says, Kotoni Mias. It, however, says in this source, Nefesh Nifreshami Ste Ruchosa Eilech Eilech. It speaks about a tomb marking, marker that is broken, as a, two of its four walls are broken, and we want to assume my lav, the Iko Tikra. Is it not so that there is a roof that remains on this nefesh, and yet in the source it was taught as something she'ein mis'abrin imo, that it doesn't help to make it, or to give it significance? And the Gemara then will reject that and says, lo, deleko tikra, the case in the source is that it did not have a roof, leaving our original question unanswered, because our question concerns a two-sided, a structure with two sides and a roof. Now that we've pointed out the general structure, let's go back to the beginning. Toshma. So once again, we're asking about two sides with a roof. The source begins, Elu Shemis Abrin Ima. The following are items that will constitute an extension of a city. Only from only from that point onwards would we measure our tchum. So look at illustration 4. You can see the nefesh back on page 100. Nefesh yesh ba arba amos al arba amos. And nefesh is a type of tomb marker, a structure built over a grave. If it has an area of 4 by 4 amos, so it is of significance, and would thereby constitute some a reason for extending the city from that point. The Rashi adds detail here, a few lines down in the Rashi, Nefesh Binyan Al Hakever, a structure on a grave, Ustam Ladiras Shemer Hakever Ovid, it's understood to be constructed for the dwelling of a guard of the grave. Hilko Hafagav Delo Dyer Bo Bay Base Dirohu, even if the guard isn't actually living in there, it's nevertheless viewed as a base dira, as a domicile, and hence reason enough for extending the city. Other extensions, Vageshir, Vakever Shiesh Bohen Beis Dira, a bridge or a grave that has a dwelling, Beis HaKnesses Shiesh Bo Beis Dira L'chazan, a synagogue that has a dwelling for the caretaker. The chazan is the one who is the caretaker of the synagogue. Ubeis Avodas Kechovim Shiesh Bo Beis Dira Lekomrim, or a house of idolatry that has a dwelling in it for its priests. The Urvois of Otsoros Shibasados. The Urvos are horse stalls or horse stables and storage areas. Otsoros are storage areas that are in fields. The Eshbohen Beis Dira, and there is some type of dwelling in them. Burginin Shebesocha. Burginin are types of booths that are in a field. The Habayis Shebiyam, illustration 33. It's a house that's located in water. Hare Elu Misabrin Ima. The house that we just described is built on some type of island that's within 70 and two-thirds amos of the existing city. Harelu Misabrinimo, these are considered extensions of the city, and only from them onwards would you start measuring the 2,000 amos. And now the second half of the source, which essentially is a repeat of the first half, missing, however, they are missing some element. V'elu she'ein Misabrinimo, the following will not constitute the extension of a city. Nefesh shenifritzo mishtei ruchosel elech v'elech. Now here, we dot underline this because this really is the main reason for bringing in this source. And here we're referring to a nefesh that's broken on two opposite walls are broken. V'hagesher v'akever she'ein lohen beis dira. U'beis ha'knesses she'ein lo beis dira l'chazen. U'beis ha'vodis l'chavim she'ein lo beis dira l'komrin. For urvos v'otsoros she'besodos she'ein lohem beis dira. All of these are simple negations of that which we saw in the first part of the source. All of these are lacking the dwellings that were necessary. Ubor v'shiach u'ma'ora v'goder v'shovach shebesocha v'abayas shebesfina. A pit, a bor and shiach are different types of pits. A ma'ora is a cave. V'goder, a fence. V'shovach shebesocha, a shovach is a bird coop. V'abayas shebesfina, basically would be a houseboat. The Rashi mentions bayis shebesfina lo kaviale duchta, a houseboat doesn't have a fixed location. Pomim shebesoch shivim le'ir upomim sheno. Sometimes it's within 70 and 2/3 amos, and sometimes it floats beyond that point. So ein elu misabrin imo. The source concludes by saying that these are not included in the ibur of the city. They don't constitute a city extension. Kotoni mihas. It, however, says in this source, and this is the reason we're bringing in this source, is nefesh shenifritza mishtei ruchoseha elich ve'elich. We speak about this nefesh whose walls are broken on two opposite sides, and it said in this source, and by the way, notice the arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You can align this with the upper arrow. And it's said in this source that this nefesh is not an extension of the city. My lav, the ikotikro. Is it not speaking about a case where there is a roof? And even so, since it's breached on two opposite sides, it does not constitute the extension of a city. So that would answer the original question. The Gemara says, no, loy, that's not what this source is talking about. The lekotikra, it does not have a roof. It's a nefesh without a roof, and only two remaining walls exist, so that has no significance, and hence that would not constitute an extension of a city. However, as far as what is the story with a nefesh that has two walls and a roof, so that we don't conclude that from this source. Bayis shebiyam. Lemai chozi. If this is not clear, use the arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, and you can see that it was mentioned in the source, the house built on the island near the city. The Gemara is asking, lemai chozi, of what use, of what function does that have? Omar Rav Papa, bayis she'osui lefanis boikelim shebesfina. It's a location that boats that are traveling in that area will unload their kalim, their utensils, their vessels, unload it and store it in that house. So that house has a specific function. Another quote from the source, a little star on the side of the Gemara text. You can align this with the star above on the left-hand side of the Gemara text. You can see what this is referring to. Uma'ora, the Gemara asks here, Uma'ora ein misaberes ima, a cave, is that something that doesn't constitute a city extension? V'hotoni Rebbi Chiyo Ma'ora misaberes ima. A cave does constitute an ibor of the city. In other words, if you have a city and there's a cave within 70 and 2/3 amos, so you would start the tchum measurement from the edge of the ma'ora. So this contradicts then that which we saw in the source that said that a ma'ora ein misaberes ima. Omar Abaye resolves this. Kishiesh binyon al piha. And here you can take a look at illustration 34 to appreciate this all the more. In the event that the cave has a structure at its entrance, that is the type of me'ora referred to in Reb Chiya's source, that's misaberes ima. The Gemara asks, v'tepuk le mishum binyon gufei, if as you just answered, that there's a bias, there's a structure at the entrance of the cave. So isn't the structure itself reason for extending the city from that point? Why make reference to the Ma'ora at all? Answer, Lo Tzricha Lahashlim. I need the Ma'ora as well in order to complete the required dimensions. So if you look in, again, in illustration 34, and we also look at the Rashi, you'll see to the end, toward the end of the narrow lines, Lahashlim, Im Ein Habinyan Roy Ladira. Imagine that house is a squalid structure. Kigon She'ein Bo Arbal Arba. It's less than 4x4 amos. It's a very small structure, a booth-type structure, less than 4x4 amos. Mahanule Ma'or Lashlumi. The cave that's attached to this house will help to extend the dimensions to make it, the house, into something dwelling worthy, giving it the necessary 4x4 amos required to have significance. Continuing in the Gemara, Omar Rav Huna. Let's take a look at 35, illustration 35 at the bottom of 106. Huts, thatch, roofed huts. Omar Rav Huna, Yoshvei Tzrifin Ein Moididin Lohen Elo Mipesach Botehen. These don't constitute a municipality, and therefore the tchum, when you have a community of huts, their tchum is measured from their individual doorways. In other words, from the houses or the huts themselves. And we don't view all of them as one collective unit, and allowing us to measure from their outer edge, their collective outer edge. Mosiv Rav Chisda. A question is raised. The question lasts a couple of lines. The pasuk says, "Vayachanu al hayarden mibeis hayishimois." This is a reference to the Jewish encampment in the desert during their exodus from Mitzrayim. It says they encamped al hayarden mibeis hayishimois. These are locations in the desert. The Omar Rabo Bar Bar Chana l'didchaz Eliyahu Asra. Rabbi says, I saw this location. Of course, Rabbi Bar Chana lived many, many years after Yetzias Mitzrayim. And he says, I saw that location. V'havei Tlosa Parsi al Tlosa Parsi. And the area constituting the encampment of the Jewish people, as referred to in that posuk, measured 3 parsa by 3 parsa, which would mean 12 mil. 1 meal is 2,000 amos. So 12 meal is much greater than 2,000. It's 12 times 2,000 is 24,000 amos by 24,000 amos. The Tchum Shabbos is 1 meal. Here we're talking about an encampment of 12 meal. V'tanya, and there's a source that says, K'shei Nifnin, when they have to relieve themselves, as in the context of, pardon us, going to the bathroom, Ein nifnin lo lifneim velo litzidein elo lacharehen. They would not relieve themselves off to the sides of the encampment, nor in front of the encampment, but only to the back of the encampment. What does this mean practically speaking? People have to relieve themselves, of course, 7 days a week, including on Shabbos. And we're talking about people that were in living in huts. We're talking about travelers in the desert. So you can talk about an encampment of hut dwellings. Someone, let us say, at the front of the camp, in order for him to relieve himself, he would have to journey on Shabbos 12 meal. Not 1 meal, which is Tum Shabbos, but 12 times that distance. And he was able to do that. So what must be the case? It must be that he's not in violation of Tum Shabbos, but rather the whole camp of huts is viewed as one entity. This is a challenge to that which we were just taught, namely Rav Huna's din, that Yoshet Srifin ain't Modin Elo Mipesach Batam. Here we see that's not so. The Yoshet Srifin are considered one municipal entity, and they measure their tum from the outer edge of the encampment, not from their houses. Omar Le Rava. So Rava answers on behalf of Rav Huna. Digle Midbar Kuamris, are you raising a question on Rav Huna from Digle Midbar, from the Jewish encampment in the Exodus from Mitzrayim? Kevon Dichtiv Behu, since regarding the camp of Israel, it says, Al Pi Hashem Yachanu Val Pi Hashem Yisou, by the word of the Almighty would they encamp, and by His word would they travel. Keman Dekvio Luhu Domi, it's as if it's an established municipality. Since the Jewish encampment was determined by the word of the Almighty, therefore, it's considered a kavua, an established location, giving it more significance than random huts that happen to be located near one another in any given location. So the Jewish encampment is a different story. Omar Rav Chinuno Bar Rav Kahana, Omar Rav Ashi, Im Yesh Shom Shalosh Chatzeros Shel Shnei Botim Huk Be'u. In illustration 35, if you look carefully, you'll see that in addition to the huts, there are also formal stone structures, regular fixed houses, permanent houses. So their presence, if you have three chatzeros, three courtyards, each courtyard having two houses opening into them, that will establish all of the domiciles as one municipal entity. And of course, what that means then is that the tum will, the measurement of the tum will start from the outer perimeter as opposed to from the individual doorways. As we continue in the Gemara, we have a new topic heading. On the side, we have the Nosei, Yoshvei Tzrifin, Benosein Asuros. First topic we'll deal with has to do with hut dwellers and a description of their daughters or their women folk. That will become clear as we go on in the Gemara. Under our Mivneh heading, the structural note features the triangle, Shnei Meimros Shur Yehuda Marav Al Mokum Megurim. Two comments made by Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav regarding dwellings. Now the Gemara. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav. Yoshvei Tzrifin, V'holchei Midborios, Chayehen Einon Chayen. We're talking about people that dwell in huts, or desert travelers that are traveling with their wives. Chayehen Einon Chayen. It's what we would say that that's no life. And Nishen Uvneim Einon Shelohen, their wives and their children are said not to be theirs. This will become clear as we go on explaining this. Tanyo Nami Hochi. We have a Tanaic source that supports this. Eliezer Ishbiria Omer, this is his name, is Eliezer Ishbiria. He says, Yoshvei Tzrifin ki Yoshvei Kvorim. People that dwell in huts are like people dwelling in graves, meaning they're like dead. Rashi says, Lefishem Chusorin Hano, the Loikin Beruchos Bezerva Motor. They don't have pleasure. They're subject to all of the environment's elements. Winds and rains. The source goes on. The Al Benoisein Omer regarding their daughters, it says, "Oru Shochiv im Kol Behema." Cursed be the one that conducts intimacy with animals. That's an expression, and we'll have to see what's the point. What's the application of this? My taima, why do you say that their daughters, Benoseim Asuros? What's the problem over here? So we have a couple of approaches, two approaches. Number one, Ulo Omar, She'ein Lohen Merchatzos. Rav Yochanan Omar, Mipnei Shemargishin Ze Loze Betavila. These things need further explanation. We glance at Rashi. She'ein Lohen Merchatzos. V'holchin, hut dwellings and desert travelers, they don't have bathhouses. The men folk have to walk a great distance to find a place to bathe. And in the absence of the men folk, the husbands, when Shosein is kokos liminafin, the fishoir azuvil me'enish. As a result of the men folk going off to bathe, the women folk are left unattended, and minafim are the immoral ones. Take advantage of this opportunity and conduct intimacy with them. And a woman who's married that engages in intimacy with another man becomes forbidden to her husband. Hence, we saw the teaching above that Nishem B'neim Einon Shelahen. And of course, the children that result from this are not the children of the actual fathers. There's another point, and that was mentioned by Rabbi Yochanan, and it had to do with tevila. Tevila is the immersion in a mikveh that a woman must do in order to become tahora after being a nida. So the Rashi says b'tevila, she'ein lohen mikvois. There are no mikvos. There are no mikveh pools, ritual baths that are located in the desert, nor in thatched hut communities. Rashi says, "She'ein loin mikvois v'holchos hanoshim likbol b'mokom rochik," and as a result, the women folk have to walk a distance to find a proper mikveh. V'kora lechaverta, and she therefore summons her friend to go with her. She doesn't want to go alone. U'margishin hashchenim. And neighbors, because the woman, any given woman, doesn't go off by herself, so word gets out that a particular woman has to leave, and the neighbors become aware. V'yesh rosha roidev achrayan, and amongst any given community, there might be a wicked man that chases after them. U'misyachid imoyim, and then is in private with them. U'tnan lo yisyachid odom im shtei noshim. The Mishnah in Maseches Kiddushin tells us that one man is not to be alone, even if there are two women. And of course, we're dealing with the issue of another issue of immorality. So, for two reasons, we have this rather harsh approach that we take to the women folk of a desert travelers and the hut communities. One is the merchatzos issue, where the men folk go away to bathe, and the second was the issue of the tevila, where the women have to go at a distance to find a place for tevila. My binayu, what would be a difference between these two explanations? Iko binayu, nara de somach lebesa. A nara, a river that's near the houses, near where they are living. Rashi adds, and this is of great significance, nara roi l'tvila v'lo l'merchatz. The nara described is a place that's fit for immersion, but it's not fit for bathing. So since it's fit for immersion, Rashi says, hergish tvila l'akadah somuchla, the issue of it becoming known that a woman is going off to immerse herself, that is not a problem here, because it's near her home, so she'll go by herself and no one will know about it. So if that's the case, if you take the Hergish Tefillah approach, namely the approach of Rabbi Yochanan, if you have a hut community, there the women would not be said to be forbidden, because they won't be subject to immorality. However, the bathing problem still exists. The problem of their husbands going off to a distance to bathe leaving the women alone unattended. The Gemara continues, Omar Rav Huna, kol ir she'ein bo yerek. And this is a new topic. On the side we have a topic heading yerek, im tov olo. Vegetables, are they good for you or not? So Rav Huna says, any city that doesn't have vegetables in it, ein Talmud Chochem Rashoi Lodur Bo. Talmud Chochem, a Torah scholar, is not to dwell there. Rashi at the bottom line says, ein Talmud Chochem Lefisha Yerek Toiv Lamachol V'Nilkach Bezoil V'Yochol Lasuk B'Torah. It's something that's inexpensive, and it's good. It's health. It constitutes healthful eating, and as we say, it's inexpensive, and a person, as a result of that, can engage in more Torah study, being that he's not using whatever funds, existing funds he has for additional food expenditures. The Gemara continues. L'meimro di'erek ma'alya, second line from the bottom of the Gemara. We're asking, are you saying that vegetables are good for you? V'ha tanya, we have the following Tanaic source that poses a challenge. Shloisha dvara marben es hazevel v'koyfin es hakoyma. There are three things that constitute a zevel, is waste, in this case human waste, feces, that, and this adds to the production of human waste. And koifin sakomis causes one to be bent over, v'noitlin echod mi chomish meos memorin of shel adam, and are responsible for the diminishing of sight, 1/500th of one sight, the eluhain, and the following are these negative elements. We continue at the top of Nun Vav Omen Aleph. Pas Kevor, V'Shechor Chodosh, V'Yerek, 3 points. Pas Kevor is a type of bread that's made from poor quality flour. Shechor Chodosh, new beer, non-aged beer, and what's more important for us right now, and that's why we have the dashed underlining, V'Yerek, the issue of vegetables. So we see that vegetables are not considered positive. Gemara says, lo kasha, there really is no question. Ha betumi vikarsi, ha b'shar yarki. It depends. If you're talking about tumi vikarsi, Rashi has two opposite explanations as to whether it's good or not good, but for our purposes, tumi vikarsi will translate a reference to garlic and karsi, a type of green vegetable. And that's what one is referring to. And Hal B'Shariyarki, the other point, is referring to other kinds of vegetables. Kidisani, we have a Tanaic source that indicates that that the shum or tumi are vegetables. It says in this source, shum, which is the same as tumi, yerek, is considered a yerek, is considered a vegetable. Kreshin, chatsi, yerek. The kreshin, which in all likelihood is similar to karsi, is considered a chatsi yerek, a half a vegetable. Nira tznoin, nira sam chayim. If one sees tznoin, another type of vegetable, often translated, but we in Gemara markings don't commit ourselves to translating many types of animal life and vegetation, but there are those who translate tznoin as a radish. So in this source it says that if you see tznoin, you see the medicine of life. V'otanyo nira tznoin nira samam ovas. We have a contradictory source that says if you see tznoin, you're viewing poison. Samos, the elixir of death, but in this case it means a poison. Lo kashi, as far as the issue of the tznoin, there is no contradiction. Kan be'olin, kan be'mois. Kan be'mois hachamo, kan be'mois hakshamim. It depends. If you're talking about the olim are the leaves, those are bad. Those are kashin. That's the sama movis. If you're talking about the most, the bulbs, the tznoin itself, the vegetable itself, that's the sama chayim. And also it depends on the season. Bimos hachamo, in the summer season, the tznoin is good because they cause a cooling of the body. However, kan b'moisak shomim, in the wintertime, when a person needs to preserve his body heat so that tznoin would not be good. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav. Another comment of his, and that's why I have a number two, a second comment of Rebbe Yehuda, the name of Rav, regarding dwellings. Kol Yir Sheyesh Bo Malos Umordos, a city that is built on hills. Malos are inclines and Mordos declines. Adam Bebeimo Shebo Mesim Bechatzi Yemen. Men and animals that live in them die at half their lives. Mesim Salgadaitoch, what they die? Eloimo Mazkinin Bechatzi Yemen. Doesn't mean they die at half life, but rather they age twice as rapidly. And this aging is a result of the constant need for exertion, the torach. The hilly environment means extra strain walking up these hills at all times. Omar Rav Huna braid Rav Yeshua Hani, Muyasa Debay Biri Udebay Narash Az Kinun. The Muyasa is a reference to these Malus Umordos, the hilliness of these towns, Bay Biri and Bay Narash, caused me to age. Apparently, Rav Huna, Rav Shul lived in these places, and he spent time there, and his strenuous activity in going up and down these hills caused him to age more rapidly. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.